Andy Rice, our branding and advertising expert. He's on the line to us from Johannesburg this evening. Good evening to you, Andy Rice. Such an interesting move by the Coca-Cola company. After 60 years, they've pulled the tab on tab.
They have indeed, and it's not an insignificant marketing and business decision. The discontinuation of brands was discussed on this very feature a while back when Nestlé announced the discontinuation of everybody's favorite marshmallow chocolate bar, Chocolate Log, and that caused a certain amount of frisson in the Twitter sphere in particular. And now Coca-Cola have taken a 60-something-year-old brand, nearly 60 years, that's Tab, and said that by the end of 2020, Tab will be just a part of history. And it must be a big decision, because that's a global brand, as we know. Chocolate Log was at least just a local brand. But it's a big competitive sector, and they must be feeling that they have enough cover in their other sugar and caffeine-free brands, like Coke Zero and Diet Coke, to be able to remove Tab from the equation without too much loss of business. And another reason why it's a surprise, perhaps, is because brand value is all about the emotional value of the brand. And if you go further back in time to when Nestlé bought the Roundtree company, they paid a huge premium over what any sensible auditor would have said the company was worth, not out of folly, but out of recognition that in brands like Rolo and Aero and Kit Kat and Peppermint Crisp, Bar One, and a whole lot more, they were buying a valuable suite of brands that couldn't be replicated just by taking a competitive stance. The value of those brands was enormous. And so that's what Coke has to replace when they discontinue the Tab brand. They've done it recently before. I think it was Just Juice that was migrated last year into a new fruit juice brand called Cappy. So maybe they feel they can do the same and find either the new brand or the strengthening up of the existing players in that category to be a strong player.
Still. It shows how much attention I'm paying to the world of brands. I've seen Cappy, but I didn't miss Just Juice one little bit. In the same way as Chocolate Log, and I like the way you refer to it as a suite of brands. Chocolate Log, again, outraged. I was furious. You know, you hear this news, Chocolate Log's going to be, and you go, but I'd love Chocolate Log. And then they did a bunch of giveaways on the radio, and they sent some around, and so we each got one. And I went, oh yeah, that's why I haven't bought one in 15 or 20 years. It's horrible. And that's why it's being discontinued in the same way as the news of Tab. And you go, oh, that's a pity. When last did I have it? 20 years ago is the last time I had a Tab. And you look at the numbers, and this is where I suppose these guys make a decision. Together, Coke Light and Coke Zero have got about 35% of the world's low-calorie drinks market. Tab, do you know how much of the market Tab has had?
I would guess it's very low single figures.
0.1%. This thing has been dead in all but name for years, and it just surprises me how often these things can be left to chug along from an emotional point of view, because, oh, it's a brand, it's got heritage, people will be cross with us if we get rid of it. Well, hardly anyone drinks the blimmin' stuff, and that's what's so extraordinary about it, I suppose, and that's why perhaps, certainly in the case of Tab, there's been no outrage.
Well, and yet they were the pioneers of the so-called health category or subcategory of the CSD market, carbonated soft drinks. So, yeah, I mean, they've done their role. They've done their bit over the 60 years in this country, at least. They've carved out some interest in slightly healthier brands. But clearly, the Coca-Cola brand, as it appears under Coke Zero and Diet Coke, is that much stronger, massively stronger, in fact.
Yeah, we don't, you know, and again, Coca-Cola have made that mistake, of course, of messing with the recipe there as well. The Coca-Cola company are discontinuing something like 250 brands, I think. I think that was the number I saw the other day. They went and put stevia, which shouldn't go anywhere near anything, into Coca-Cola, and sort of thought, you know, we can make another low-calorie entrant into this market. And it was just, you know, horrible. And so that, fortunately, is being discontinued as well. And, I mean, I suppose you've got to try new and exciting and different things, and it's not an easy game at all. Not for a moment am I suggesting it is, but I don't know anybody who's going to miss Tab. Are you going to miss Tab, Andy? You're a healthy health nut in your own right.
Of course I am. I'm an absolute pillar of health and drinks. I think that the issue is that the rationalization of brand portfolios is something that's been looked at right across the board in almost every category and from almost every major manufacturer, because your portfolio strategy should be to have enough brands to cover the majority of the market, but not so many that they start to cannibalize each other and duplicate the offering. So I obviously feel that the low calorie, low sugar, low caffeine category is adequately covered by their existing Coke-branded brands without having to maintain this slight outsider in the form of Tab.
It's a silly name for a drink anyway. Your hero, Andy. I love the ideas of heroes and zeros, and we're getting those this evening as well. Who is your hero tonight?
Well, if you go back a few years, there were certain people warning that the management consultancies were eyeing marketing budgets with some avarice. They had more or less cut back where they could on their clients' other aspects of their business, and they suddenly saw these very large numbers being thrown at the brand and at the marketing teams. And so it's said that they started to work out how they could get into that space from above, if you like, because management consultancies are obviously much superior to advertising agencies, and they ought to be able to use their superior intellect to get in there. Well, they did indeed do that, and they started to make noises about how they were going to become major players in the advertising world. And the professional services companies or management consultants, the big four at the time, started to make their plans. And everybody thought this was apocalyptic and it would be the end of creativity. And the question was posed, will Accenture add gravitas and logic to creativity, or will creativity temper some of that arrogance and data-based proposition that the professional services companies are prone to adopt? But in fact, it has turned out, I think, to be quite a beneficial new area. Accenture Interactive claimed to be one of the biggest advertising agencies in the world now because of their data strength. And others like Deloitte Digital are making similar claims. But the way they've done it is clever, in my view, in the sense that they have acquired highly creative companies. I think there must have been some culture shock. But Accenture went out and acquired, they're not agencies that are operative here, but they are globally highly respected as creative powerhouses, like Karmarama, and more recently, Droga5. And there was much talk of that being a sellout when David Droga decided that he would like to join forces with Accenture. Well, it now seems that Accenture is starting to demonstrate they understand the brand, and they've started with their own brand, and they've relaunched Accenture Interactive on the basis of a new proposition, which is called Let There Be Change, not wildly original in my view, but it's just a demonstration that here is a company that survived very well in the old days without having to worry about marketing themselves, now living up to their own strategy and their own acquisition, companies like Droga5 and Karmarama. So I think that they deserve hero status, not really for the caliber of the work, which, as I say, I think is a little bit pedestrian, but for their demonstration that they can learn from others and that they can put their brand out there with as much confidence as anyone else, particularly from the professional services sector, where creativity is not an immediate expectation.
No, but that's the point. It's such an interesting change in diversification. One wonders if they get themselves into trouble at some point, these huge professional services companies, as they have in the conflict between accounting and consulting, for example. You start adding advertising into the mix, you've got to wonder. Zeros, Andy, and I do like your zero. I'm a believer in your zero. Well, I'm not a believer in your zeros. I like your zero for zeroing in on these zeros.
Rewind time. I'd like, if I may, at the end, if there's time, Bruce, and you can tell me to return to a topic I've covered before, but I'm getting crosser and crosser about. But in the meantime, my zero is a bunch of denialists and naysayers who argue that TV is dead, television is dead. It's a very common refrain that we hear from lots of different directions, and it has some. Well, not to say TV is dead, but TV has a slight headache, might be appropriate for the fact that it's inevitable that there's going to be a migration of our viewers to online from previously broadcast propositions. But it is nowhere near as significant as so many people think. And new data from Nielsen, for example, in the States, shows that the average adult there spends 4 hours and 30 minutes a day watching traditional television, but only 1 hour and 6 minutes on streaming. And while the growth of streaming has been quite substantial and impressive, it still constitutes only a quarter of video viewing in total. And I just think that, you know, your discussion with Arthur Goldstock earlier was interesting because it demonstrates the importance of content. And content will be the great magnet rather than the channel or medium by which that content is delivered. And if you've got great content like DSTV has, particularly in the sporting arena, or any number of companies have in the news and current affairs area, then people will find you. And they don't start off by saying, I must find you on my iPad, or I must find you on my zillion inches screen television. They just will find you. And in this stage, television remains the most significant medium for reaching the mass of consumers out there. If you can't launch a mass market brand without using television. That's always been the case, and it looks like it's going to be the case for a while to come. So zero goes to those people who continue to stand up at podiums and conferences and say television is dead. As I say, it's a bit like the old Mark Twain refrain that rumors of his death were greatly exaggerated. And so it is with television as a marketing channel.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't watched traditional television for absolutely ages. I mean, you sit and you watch and you're sporting events and stuff, and the advertising has got to be good. The advertising has got to be good because otherwise it does push people away, or people get up and go to the loo and go make tea. I mean, it's the age-old problem, isn't it?
Yeah, that's been the refrain for some time, but the reality is that, if I give you another quote I've probably used before, stop interrupting the things that I'm interested in and start being what I'm interested in. And that's the role of brands and their communication, is to make people think, oh, I love that commercial and I wonder how I can see it again. And they go onto YouTube and track it down. And so it goes. And I think that the caliber of content is a far more important and far more difficult decision to make than whether it then gets sent out on this channel or that channel.
Andy Rice, our branding and advertising expert this evening on The Money Show.